Welcome back. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you with me one more time on the Life 2.0 podcast. This is the 99th episode in this iteration of all the work I've done in radio for 25 years. And I've been on a hiatus for a little bit. I'll explain that shortly. I want to talk about my year in review as it kind of goes through my insights and those type of things. This is the time of year when we typically, and we've probably seen this already on some of the major news channels, talk about the famous people and the infamous people that have passed away in 2019. But there's someone that needs to be on the most incredible person list that I ever met who is not here anymore. We'll talk about that as well. And along those lines, you're hearing this on New Year's Eve 2019, which would have been John Denver's 76th birthday. I want to talk a little bit about my old pal John and his ongoing influence in the world, which I find fascinating, and I believe he would too. I want to talk about the worst thing you can do is to make a New Year's resolution. New Year's resolutions usually just become New Year's disillusionment. We'll talk about that. And my one caveat with making a resolution is the one I'm going to make for myself, which I am not going to do anymore in 2020. As I mentioned, this is the 99th episode. We're going to go up the down staircase in the outdoor. And while everybody else is going left, I'm going right. And if they go right, I'm going left and stay right down the middle because that's where it's clear. Let's get to it. So I have been off the air, and I use that term, even though this is arguably not like, quote, terrestrial radio and Sirius XM satellite radio, which are the two main places that I have spent my career. I've been doing the podcast thing on and off for about 6 years now, and the last time I actually did a show was December 3rd, so that was 28 days ago. And that show, which, again, I want to thank you for donating. That was Corbin's Legacy, and it was about Corbin and her mom, Joni Leafman. Corbin passed away in 2015 at the age of 31. She was a teacher and made sure that no kid went hungry at the school that she taught at. And in that time, since Corbin passed away, Joan has fed hundreds of thousands of young kids in Arizona, and they continue to do that. And a lot of your donations went to help that. So thank you so much for doing that. That's really the power of this type of medium. So I get a chance to, you know, fire up the microphone and talk about the things that matter most to me. And to remind you, hopefully, that sometimes what we think matters most is what matters least. And that's the stuff that's in the headlines. And then we start to reverse it and realize what we spend the least amount of time on is what we really should be spending the most amount of time on because we're all running out of time. So anyway, it's been 28 some odd days since I've done a podcast, and there was a few reasons for the hiatus. Number one is energetically, I can only do so much at one time, like everybody else. I don't want to become some sort of robot at this point in my career. And I realized in the past year, I have not only written my own book and had that edited, done, published, Phenomenon, Sacred Moments, Messages, Memories, and other shit that I can't explain. That's now out on Amazon and Lulu and Barnes & Noble and all those places, doing very well. And glad for that. That in itself is an achievement. And I'm not backslapping. I'm just telling you it's a lot of hard work. And it had been 9 years since I wrote a book. And now I remember why it's been 9 years, because it's a lot of effort. And this is not a War and Peace read. The most common response I get is, could you write another one soon? Because I read this one in like 3 days. And you know what? Good. I'm glad to hear it. We don't have the time or the attention span anymore to sit and read long form. So the stories in this book, they're all true events that happened to me that I can't explain for the most part. And I think the whole idea was to share those with anybody who reads the book and give you permission to some degree to think about the things in your life that are synchronistic or like, what was that? And how does that fall together? And all that type of stuff. So these were stories that I had talked about over the years with a few people, and then I put them between the covers of a book. But that in itself was a really good thing for me to do. I enjoy writing. It's been something that ever since I was a kid, I thought, man, the best thing you could ever do is have your name on the spine of a book. And that's how I grew up, and we only had four channels, so books were the whole world to me. So I was really glad to get that done in 2019. And at the same time, I also edited two other books, and they're not mine. So my brain has to constantly get divided. I literally, if you were sitting at the studio here with me, when I, if you watch me work every day, I have to cut the day into three parts, and I have to stop literally doing one thing. I have to take a meditation break, sit on the couch, take a nap. I have to shut that part of my brain off in order to kind of reconvene after that and do a different project. And then similarly, I need 7 minutes somewhere just to totally check out and then come back. So working out, taking a walk, doing errands, I have to really, you know, get a different wrench on the project in order to get this stuff done. So wrote my own book. It's published. It's out. People are buying it. Yay. And also edited down two more books that will be out in 2020. And I'm excited for both of them. I've worked behind the scenes. I don't need my name on the cover. I got one of those myself, or actually three now. But it's so great on my end to work with people who have a message. And both of the books that are coming out, I'm not going to tell you what they are yet because it'll be a little while. When that happens, I'll let you know. They are all about uplifting the human spirit from the quantum level when it comes to the happiness in our lives, and definitely from the spiritual level when we think about how difficult our lives are and how we process all that and what we need to do ourselves, right? Like this is all about an inside job here, being alive on the planet, and what we need to do in order to kind of reassess our priorities and find the best within ourselves that so easily gets lost. So that's how it was for me, just the book end of things, not to mention the fact that doing these shows and the production pieces that go with it, on one hand, fill me up. I've been doing this so long that I can't imagine not doing it. And that, quite frankly, was one of the reasons I took a hiatus to say, do I still want to keep doing this? A friend of mine said that the average podcast lasts 9 episodes. And I'm thinking, why would you start? But okay, I give you credit for the 9. This is the 99th episode on top of the 35 I did at CBS and top of the thousands of radio shows I've done over the years. So for me, it isn't even about podcasting. It's about delivering the mail. And the route that I have now is very different than it was when I started in 1997 and on terrestrial radio, where people knew exactly where I was every day from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock PM Eastern Standard Time. And they knew me there, and then they knew me at Oprah Radio and where I was at with Dr. Oz or Gene Chatsky or my own show on Saturdays, and then they knew me on WGN and CBS. And so those were appointed listening. Everybody knew where I was at. And this platform, the podcasting platform, is just inundated with stuff. And so I'm always on alert saying, am I delivering the mail, and is there anybody actually reading it? Because if nobody's reading the mail, I don't need to deliver it anymore. It's more important that I just live it myself than deliver it. And then an email will come in, or a text message, or somebody will message me on Facebook and say, I heard a show that you did, or I was listening to your show with fill in the blank guest, and it really just, thanks so much for doing that. And that's why I deliver the mail. Let me tell you what. The media business is very, very difficult, and the radio especially. For some reason, TV's got a lot of it too, but for some reason, radio is filled with a lot of bottom feeders. And I don't do well with bottom feeders. You know, I just don't. And I don't have the time, energy, effort to do that stuff. And yet somehow it's become infiltrated over the years with this lower energy, lower level human life forms. And so it's like a recycling system. So in terrestrial radio, a lot of the names that you hear, they just keep popping up over and over again, making more money, more money, more money. And, you know, then they bounce to another station. So on a terrestrial side, there's not a whole lot of movement forward. This is really AM radio. And so there's no place for me right there at this point. And I'm okay with that. It took a while, but I was okay with it. But every time I read a story about somebody who is back for the fourth time after drug rehab or whatever, or, you know, spouse abuse or whatever, they're getting another chance and they're making 750 grand a year doing it, that kind of torques my frickin' bolts. So there's that piece. And then there's the XM satellite piece, which is a very different animal and more similar to this. A lot of stations, but they own all the stations. So you know exactly when you click on in your car, what you're listening to, who you're listening to, and why you're listening to them. So that's that piece. That got me closer to the podcasting. But this part, where if I didn't have the following, and I'll get to that in a second as well, which is kind of creeping me out. I got a lot of followers. I'm looking for leaders. Let's do that. Shouldn't there be like a leaderboard? I mean, I understand the term, and it's nice to have followers, but hopefully what you're hearing in these shows also helps you become a leader, at least in your own life, that you're not just following what I'm doing, because, really? However, if you're finding value in all these 99 shows, part of that is to help you become a leader in your own life. And I do not want to be a life coach. I'm not going to take... I got enough figuring my own shit out. I don't need to be telling other people one-on-one, like, here's what you ought to do. No thanks. But so that XM thing got me a little closer to the podcasting. And if I were starting today without followers, without having done this for 25 years, without having written books and done TED Talks and all the stuff that I have accomplished, I wouldn't start. It's too much. There's way too many choices. Listen, I went to the gym this morning. And when I left the gym, I went over to the supermarket and I was going to get some lunch meat. And look, I like lunch meat. Okay. Let me just call it what it is. Whoever invented olive loaf is a god to me. I don't know who put them together, but if I get my hands on olive loaf, which I shouldn't do very often, but I do, I'm good. And I don't eat breakfast like cereal for the most part or whatever. I eat sandwiches because I'm up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I need that. So I go to get some lunch meat. And it dawned on me, once again, that the very nice lady behind the counter was asking me if the meat that she was cutting for me was the right thickness. That's the country we live in. You get to choose how thick your lunch meat is. I'd like it a little thinner. There's a guy there who always says his best response to someone when they say a little thinner is, so you want it thin, thin? You want to be able to like read the newspaper through your crackers ham? And so... it's so fascinating that the concept of choice and all the choices we have, even down to the fact if your bologna is thick enough for you or not, that podcasting with the hundreds of thousands of choices people have to listen to something, that I'm still swimming in that. And as I said, if I had not done this for all the years that I have and have the technology behind me to do it and deliver the message in the mail, what have you, and have these guests on and talk about this stuff, I wouldn't start today. There's no way. It's too daunting of a task. However, I also roll back to 1997, and I didn't know that I probably shouldn't start in radio because it's very difficult, and nobody just starts in radio without any experience, and I did. So sometimes being ignorant about things is good until you figure out that, you know, it ain't good, and you learn along the way. But I don't know that I'd start this podcasting thing had I not had these legs underneath me. So I had a decision to make. This is the 99th episode. There are people that invest $20 a month in this show. And I do 4 to 6 shows a month, which means it's about $5 a week roughly to hear these rants, raves, and other things that I do and the guests and all the rest. And I'm grateful to them that they feel that what's offered, the $20 worth, which you, I mean, $20, you can walk in and just see a movie if you're lucky, and then you walk out and it's over with. This is a month's worth of programming for people. So they support this, and I'm so grateful for it. We've lost some, you know, some subscribers. That's going to happen, and we've gained some, and that's going to happen. And yet it remains steady, and I hope that everybody who listens to this podcast and picks it up on the Podbean platform page saw the hiatus sign that I hung out. I didn't get any death threats or where the hell are you for the last month or so. And I appreciate that. But I had to make a decision because delivering the mail is one thing and it's important to me and it's my calling. This is also something I do so I don't have to do other things, or at least I can find the time to spend on this without having to do other things. And so the subscriber base allows for that. And yet... It's a lot of work. So I thought to myself, well, do I want to continue? And if I don't, what are the ramifications of that? And if I do, what are the ramifications of that? So I've been pondering this back and forth for about 3 weeks as part of the whole John's on a hiatus deal. And it was in conversation, actually, with my daughter, who has had her share of challenges over the years, with kidney failure, and we've been dealing with some of that for the last year and a half, and all that goes along with that. And we were having this conversation last night, and we were talking about the path in life and the things that are in our path, and the journey that we're on. And you have to be aware of it to even realize that there is a path or a journey. Most people just, they don't see that. And that's okay, unless it isn't. And for me, it isn't. I need to see it. This is something I am committed to. And yet there are times I get as human as anybody else and say, yeah, screw it. Just I'll go do something else. And it really doesn't matter. So we're having this conversation last night about that specific point. And my daughter said, Dad, I don't think I've ever met anybody at all who has the tenacity that you do to continue doing what you do. I've never, it's just the most admirable thing about you, this tenacity that you have in order to do what you think you're supposed to do while you're here. It's just a rare thing. And when she said that, I was very flattered. I've never really thought of it that way. And then I started thinking about why I am that way, about a lot of things, about, oh, I think I'll start writing another book after 9 years, or I'll help these other people write their books, or I'll go out and do another talk, or I'll do the podcast, or whatever it may be. I kind of made a left turn with all this, and I thought, you know, again, expectation and reality rarely line up in life, rarely line up. People expect to win the lotto all the time, never happens, and they get pissed off when they don't win, even though the odds are way against them. So, and as a reminder, if you realize, you know, it's 1 in 400 trillion chance you're born, you already kind of won the lotto already, so kind of move from that point on. But I decided once she said that to me that I needed that reminder that I do this, quite frankly, for my own salvation as much as any contribution I could possibly make. I've seen too much and experienced too much to just hold it to myself. I think that while we're here, we're supposed to do something with the time we're here. Irma Bombeck said something to the effect, the great columnist who passed away years ago, that when she stands in front of the Almighty and he asked her, what did she do with her life, that she was able to say, I used up everything you gave me the best way I possibly could. And I take that to heart. So while there are parts of me that would simply rather sit and complain about the Bears off season and what kind of trades need to be made and blah, blah, and the Cubs, that's just fodder to me. You know, we're running out of time. It's always much later than we think. And so I've decided, without drawing it out any longer, that you're stuck with me for a while. And if you choose to be a subscriber, thank you so much for continuing it. If you've been listening to these shows and you find value in them and you want to do that, it's easy to go to any one of the shows that are on my page where it says become a subscriber. You click through, $20 comes off your credit card every month. And to be clear, I don't get $20. It gets split up between the Podbean platform and the Stripe billing account, and I come away with $16.40. So this is not John getting wealthy doing this stuff. And I'll tell you what, nothing would make me happier, quite frankly, because, you know, kind of having a well-rounded outing here, I'd love to have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people throwing in $20. If there were 10,000 people listening, it'd be like a dollar, not 20. So whether that happens or not is not within my control. My only control is whether I'm going to turn this frickin' microphone on, and I've decided that I will do that. So this is the 99th episode. And some of the things I wanted to cover, so thanks for letting me rant and get that out of the way, and I'm glad to be back. And I was thinking about 1999, Y2K. I was on the air in Michigan, and people were going bug house. It was right, you know, it's 1999, and the computers are going to blow up the planet, and nobody thought to put zeros in. And I remember people calling, you know, there were runs on the banks, and people hoarding gas, and nobody knew what was going to happen, and then Australia rang in the new year and not a damn thing went different. It was just the way it's always been. And I think that's such a telling thing for humanity that sometimes we get upset about the things that we shouldn't and the things that we should, we kind of ignore. And so as we roll from 2019 into 2020, apparently nobody's worried about it anymore because we've already crossed that threshold. But it's such a telling thing about a foresight and vision. And the fact with all this computer technology back then, nobody had thought what would happen if it's all zeros except for the two in the front. People were hoarding money in their mattresses and people were fighting in line at the gas station. It was just, really something. So here we are 20 years later and, you know, shortly Australia will ring it in and we'll all be happy and we're going to make these resolutions. And I was a personal trainer for 6 years. In the Chicago Health Club system and a couple private clubs. And my minor is in kinesiology, and I'm pretty adept at that stuff. And even though it's harder and harder to get myself to do it sometimes at the gym, but I'm not big on resolutions, and here's why. Because 85% of them fail. Do you need something else to fail at? I can recall vividly working at the Chicago Health Club. And this was the time of year, the last 2-3 weeks of December, that the salespeople loved, because they got all these, you know, people coming in that were going to make these huge changes in their lives. They're going to go out and get it. They're going to lose 40 pounds in a week, and they're going to do all these great things. And everybody on the inside of the health club knew the deal. The first 3 weeks of January would be packed, and it will drop off by half, and then by half again. And the big joke was, if everybody who had a gym membership actually showed up, there'd be no parking spots. And there's plenty of parking about 90 days after. So I am not big at all on making especially physical resolutions for the new year because of a couple things. Number one is, it's all a perspective shift. The bottom line is, you know, there's a little game we get to play in our mind about calendars and dates and things like that. And matter of fact, just 2 days ago, on the 29th of December, I turned 61. I don't feel much different than I did at 51. And people, do you feel older? No, not really. It's just a biological number assigned to my particular machine at this point, and I don't think about it very often. And since all the parts work pretty well, I'm not going to spend much time thinking about it. So this number thing, where we get a chance to somehow roll over time and to let go of last year and bring in the new year, that I get it. I mean, I've been to enough New Year's Eve parties. One time I had like shot glasses in my eye socket. So don't tell me I don't have a good time. But it's a mind game, really. And that's no more evident than when you're going to go out and make these huge resolutions. Have you noticed that all the Weight Watcher commercials and all the stuff for Jenny Craig, they really start bombarding you this time of year? You're going to go to those parties and get fat. You need us. Nah, not so much. I mean, if you need the support, I get it. But there is something much more important that I have found over time that is lacking. And that's why 85% of people who make resolutions fail at anything, is because of lack of discipline. And I'm not talking about being disciplined when you were a kid. I'm talking about the inner discipline it takes to do whatever it takes, come what may. And that was another thing my daughter and I were talking about last night, that I said, so much of this for me, I was very lucky. I played 18, 19 years of football. And sometimes I worry about that, the way my neck hurts and I forget things. And I mean, this was serious semi-pro football and college football and high school football. But the discipline it takes to constantly get up, no matter how many times you get knocked down, that has stayed with me long after the game is done. And that's one of those things that this morning at 8:30, I'm in the gym and I got to stretch more than I used to. But I've been doing this since I was 14. And it becomes a discipline. And so a discipline is one thing, the will to continue on. But then there is a discipline that you fall into and that you do not waver from, no matter what. Most people waver. I don't know exactly why that is. I will tell you that as a trainer, I found so much of this was that the mind gives out first. The body was always second. You know, the human body can run a marathon, no problem. The mind's like, are you out of your mind? Yes, you are. So, and that's not always a bad thing. To be out of your own mind, not always a bad brainwashing, like taking the brain out of your head and washing it off, metaphorically speaking, of course, and then putting it back in. That's what this hiatus was for me, just to stop, drop, and roll out of the crap and say, let me continue on with something that has some value, and hopefully that it helps you as well. So keeping in mind that 85% of these people fail, if they were to develop their discipline muscle, and that means you do what it takes, come what may, no matter how long it takes, whatever that thing may be, that discipline starts to filter into other areas of your life. So when I train people, they would come in at a certain time. If they were late, I find them. You can't, I'm the trainer. The discipline is you're there on time. And so these things start to creep over in other areas of your life. And when you start putting yourself through, especially a physical workout, and you're disciplined with it, you start to realize that the byproducts of that is it creeps into other areas of your life. And pretty soon your life starts to change. Pretty amazing, really. But 85% of people fall short, and they go, next year I'm going to pull it off. As soon as New Year's Eve hits here, it's a setup, and it's not in your favor. That being said, and since every day is a brand new day, and you know, for many people on this planet, today is their last day. I hope I'm here tomorrow, but there's no guarantee I will be. So wait until New Year's Eve to do shit, probably not a good idea. The one thing I'm taking off the board. I'm not actually going to add anything to the board. I'm taking something off, as I am done being the truth detector for planet Earth. I'm done. I have looked at it many, many times, and I kept thinking to myself, why does it bother me so much when people put bullshit up that other people believe? Why does that bother me so much? And of course, you know, growing up as a kid, you're supposed to tell the truth, and you know, and especially in the media, you would, you know, Walter Cronkite was the truth detector, and you, what he said went, and I think a lot of that fell in line for me, is that, you know, if you're going to be in this position and have a microphone in front of you, as Mr. Rogers said, not the Tom Hanks Mr. Rogers, the real Mr. Rogers, that the space between me and you is sacred. I should treat it as such, or I could just vomit all over you. You could vomit all over me, and, you know, and nothing changes. So I take this as a serious thing. I don't take myself very serious, but I take that space very serious. And I'm telling you, 6, 7, 8 times a day, I jump on Facebook. I go diving into the landfill of Facebook to connect with friends of mine, send a couple messages back and forth, whatever, to participate in the online life, which is a term I learned over the hiatus. There's now an online life. We have online lives. I just, what an apt term. And I would find this stuff that was just false, made up, nothing, just totally made up, fabricated. And people, oh, that's true. And I'm like, well, did you check it out? Don't have to. I know I could. Okay. So probably 90% of the time when I would come across something and I would let someone know that I was connected to in the landfill of Facebook in a private message, hey, you know what? This isn't accurate. And they thanked me, and they, for the most part, removed it. And everyone said the same. Gee, I really ought to look a little deeper into that before I just throw stuff up. That's right. So, but I knew that it was time for me to stop when I was in conversation with somebody, and they know of the work that I do environmentally. And this is, to me, a no-brainer. I'm not going to argue about it. I'm not going to... You can't live in a biosphere, have 7 billion beings in the biosphere, spill all kind of shit out into the biosphere that was never there in the first place, or probably intended to be there. It's a byproduct of all of us living, and do what we do to the water, to the air, to the planet itself, the ground, to decimate species at an unprecedented rate, to deforestation, all the things that humans do because we're here. And they were telling me that, you know, I really respect what you do environmentally. It's really great and important. However, you're wrong. Wrong about what? Well, climate change is not caused by people. What is it, caused by sloths? No. I read a NASA report that said that climate change was caused because the Earth's axis has changed, and that's what's doing this. And they said, well, you can find it online. There's a report online. Like, where is this report? Well, I don't know. You just have to Google it. So I already know that this is already very vague land. It's a report somewhere that they found online that supposedly says NASA is dismissing all human involvement in climate change because the Earth's axis has changed towards the sun, and the sun's doing this. So I did look eventually, not right away, and I kind of went back and forth. And if you Google NASA and climate change, the first 1,000 articles are about how humans, based on scientific research, we have an impact. It's the DNA of denial to say that we don't. It's just bullshit. We're living in a freaking biosphere here, kids. In 30 years, there'll be more plastic in the ocean than fish. Who put it there? Aliens? Okay. So whenever I had doubt online, and you could do this yourself, you can be your own truth detector, I always go to Snopes. And if you don't like what Snopes does, there's about 19 other places that sifts through all the crap, and they get down to the bottom line and say, this is true, this is false, this is half, this is, you know, 50-50, misdiagnosed, out of date, whatever. And I finally found it, which was this, did NASA admit climate change is caused by changes in Earth's orbit, not humans? At issue are the so-called Milankovitch cycles, which describe 3 periodic variations in the way the Earth rotates around the sun. And it goes on to talk about, first of all, it's false, but I'll continue. Radio personality Hal Turner ran a segment on August 8th, 2019 that purported to report on an admission from NASA that climate change does not occur from human-made factors. This journalistic scoop did not come from a whistleblower or leaked documents, Turner stated, but from a 20-year-old educational feature on NASA's publicly accessible online magazine, Earth Observatory. It turns out it's false. So after this conversation took place and I listened, I went and found this. I once again said, this is a losing battle for me. And I got other things to do than to constantly be the Barney Fife of the internet and telling people who are, by all accounts, smart and hardworking and earnest and they don't have a huge agenda to kind of tear the world down, to constantly remind them that these things are false. To me, it's like, I think we should have been here already, but we're not. And I don't see it changing. The whole idea of fake news to be used as an agenda one way or the other has become so prevalent that it's just normal. It's a great way to not be responsible for anything. Well, what are you? We're not responsible, says here. No, it's not true. But that was the last one. I decided in that moment that when this was presented to me, and I spent, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes finding the one article that dispelled this as totally false, I wasn't going to do it anymore. So going into 2020, you're on your own. If you want to go through stuff and find things that fit your narrative and agenda and post them to the world and feel better, have at it. You will not hear from me. I'll be doing other things. Maybe I'll be fishing. Maybe I'll make a puzzle or a model, or I'll be writing another book, something that's constructive. But I realized it was a huge turning point for me that while I think the truth is of utmost importance, especially when it comes to journalism and talking about things as accurately as possible, there are a lot of people fighting the good fight. I just don't have to be one of them anymore. And so my only resolution is the sheriff is retired and the truth detector is hence turned off. And on that note, here's another episode of Earth Matters with Bill Curtis.
If humans cause climate change, then why did the dinosaurs go extinct? Asks a Florida congressman. When GOP Congressman Jeff Miller was asked if he was concerned that voters are starting to believe the majority of scientists who agree that human industry and development are contributing factors to climate change, the congressman cited the fact that no humans were around to blame when the dinosaurs went extinct. There are a few creationists who think life was like a Flintstones cartoon, but the fact is that 97% of scientists agree that human activity is accelerating weather patterns with the buildup of greenhouse gases over the past century. As the political races heat up, voters are starting to decide for themselves what actions need to be taken to slow down the human impact on climate change, even with dinosaurs in Congress denying the overwhelming evidence. Earth Matters. I'm Bill Curtis.
I get a fair amount of feedback. Comes in different forms. A lot of people will leave messages on the platform that you listen to this show, and I'll get them behind the scenes. Some are posted publicly, some are private, and I always get this stuff about politics, and I'm not being fair to this. I'm doing whatever. Listen. and one of the things that I get the chance to kind of leave behind in 2019 too is, look, if you want to run everything through the political strainer, that's all you got, and that's your whole personality is built around your politics, I wish you the best. To this point in my life, as I said, I'm 61. I've walked through countless cemeteries and been to countless wakes and funerals, and I've never once heard anybody's political affiliations mentioned in their eulogy, nor have I ever seen a headstone. And in the last 5 months, 4 people I know have died. They range in age from 44 to 73, 74 years old. And three of them were a real shock to me, and the last one was like, that's a relief. And I never once thought about how they voted or if they voted or what they did. I didn't care. And in this time when that stuff gets pushed in our face so much, I'm not going to talk about it. There's enough people. Nothing I could say one way or the other would sway anything you already think, so I'm going to leave that be. I just want to remind you you're a human being and that you're no guarantee you're going to be here tomorrow. And if you want to be remembered on your last day, if today's your last day or tomorrow, the next day, that you were a Democrat or a Republican or an independent or a liberal or a conservative, if that's as far as you've taken your life, then that's up to you. What I offer here, what I will be offering in 2020 as I kind of ramp this thing back up again, is an opportunity to leave some of that stuff behind, because it doesn't matter. I have yet, as I said, to walk through a cemetery and seen etched in stone anybody's political affiliation. And if it doesn't matter then, Why do we make it such a dividing point now so we can be right, feel better? I mean, I have a lot of friends of mine who are just pissed off no matter what's going on. And I always say to them, listen, there are people for 8 years suffered under Obama. I mean, suffered. Not really. They thought they suffered, and that's okay. And there are people for the last 4 years who have suffered under Donald Trump. Suffered because they disagree. So no matter which way you go, somebody's suffering. And the only way to alleviate that is to realize that no matter who's in the White House, it's not nearly as important as what's going on in your house. And we've got our priorities backwards. And so much time, energy, and effort. Who's the next savior that's coming along? Is it Bernie? Is it Warren? Who's it going to be? Is it Uncle Joe? If you're pinning your hopes for your life and your happiness in life and how you feel about being alive on who gets voted into office somewhere, you might want to check your, you know, your priority sheet. You might want to check that. Because if somebody else is determining how you feel because they're in a political position, man, the waters aren't very deep. And I get that there's a lot of people who don't go there. I get it. I run into them all the time. And that kind of leads me to the this little bit here. Back in 2002, I mentioned my daughter has had ongoing kidney challenges her whole life. She's born with a kidney reflux. And when she was 5, they removed her right kidney. I've written about this, so it's nothing that's out of context. And I donated a kidney to her in July of 2002, July 18th of 2002. It was an incredible thing. And she made it 17 years with a kidney. And then she went into kidney failure. And now she's on dialysis. And she's really going through it. And but it's, again, one of those things that keeps your priorities straight. Her welfare and what's going on, that's the priority. And what's happening on the headlines, I can kind of give a shit. What's the point? So in 2002, I was exhausted. I had done this kidney transplant, which took a little bit out of me. I was a young man then of 43, but it still took a bit of a toll. And I had come back from that, and there were some changes and challenges going on in my business. And at the same time, you know, I'd been on the air at that point for 5 years and had built up quite a following, and I was approached to go nationally on radio out west in, I don't know, 30 or 40 more markets, and it was good. And a lot of effort. I was carrying the brunt and the burden of all of it. It was my show, and it had to be done, and that was up to me. And I remember sitting down at lunch with a friend of mine. I said, I got no gas left. I've been called to this, but I need a break. I need a hiatus. I didn't know we called it hiatus back in 2002, but that's what it's called, hiatus, a break or gap in sequence. And I needed that. I was just friggin' exhausted. And I decided that on New Year's Eve, much like what you're hearing today, so in 2002, New Year's Eve, December 31st, I decided I was going to go take a break. I'd already let the station know that I was going off the air for an undetermined amount of time, that they'd put something else in, some political talk shows, because that's really good for you. And I didn't know when I was coming back. I just needed to stop. My brain, my body, my spirit, my just fried. And for a year prior, a good year prior to that December 31st of 02, I started getting emails every Friday from a guy, and I may have talked about this on this podcast before, but I'll do it again because it's all relative. I started getting emails from a guy every Friday night condemning me to go to hell, because I was basically the Antichrist, and I wasn't talking about Jesus, and I wasn't talking about, you know, all the things that go along with that. And it was, and so this gentleman was running everything through his religious strainer. Everything had to fit into this narrative, otherwise it didn't exist. And, you know, whether it's politics or religion, it's just a belief. If it works for you, you know, and if it doesn't, we usually don't admit it. So it was running through his religious personality, and everything had to fit in that. If it didn't fit in there, not good. The fact of the matter is, he still listened all the time. And in the beginning, I guess he listened just because he wanted to point out that I was going to hell. And actually, I was actually, the first email, I'll never forget the opening line, do you know that you're leading people across the burning lake to hell every time you go on the air? How would you like to go to your job every day and somebody checks in every Friday, and that's what you get when you're off the air at 6:02, an email, ding. Do you know you're leading people across the burning lake to hell? a concerned listener was the way he signed it. And so this went on for a year. And in the beginning, I ignored it. Then I started pushing back and tried to be logical. And I realized I'm engaging. You know, when you have somebody who's illogical and you're trying to be logical, you can't logically talk to an illogical person. It doesn't work. Both come illogical. It doesn't make any sense. So then I ignored it, went back and forth. So this went on for a year, every Friday. And the last thing I needed, the last effing thing I needed on December 31st of 2002 is to get an email from this guy. And his email was very different. Something to the effect that, I hear that you're going off the air and, I wish you well. Or it was very vague. And I thought, well, that's odd. And that was it. I was at 6:02, maybe 6:30, quarter to seven. I'm still sitting in my office, just kind of letting, 3 hours live radio. It's like playing a football game for me. It's just like, here we go. So I'm letting the energy run off, having a coffee, whatever. I was the only person in the building. The engineers were upstairs. My office was on the second floor, and I could see the wind just howling. And this was the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, right near Lake Michigan. And it was just, it was a brutal, cold, snowy, prototypical Upper Peninsula winter. And I was just relaxing. And there comes a knock on the door. And I'm thinking, oh, it's probably one of the guys from upstairs, bring me down some schnappers or a little wild turkey for a snapper, And it turns out there's this guy at the door. I said, come on in. The door opens. This guy, half covered with snow. He's wearing a baseball cap, like a big overcoat, and underneath it he had like a baseball jacket of some kind with buttons on. And I'm thinking he's in the wrong office. I mean, the place is basically closed. It's 6:30, quarter to seven on Friday night, or I think it was a Friday at that point. And he said, are you John? I said, yes. And I'm thinking, oh, Christ, here we go. This is long before people just walk in and shot people, for the most part, as a sport. But I did have this fleeting thought of, I don't have a weapon with me except my fist, and he's 6 feet away, so this might not go well. And he said, I came to apologize. And I said, who are you and why are you apologizing? He said, I'm the guy that's been sending you these emails every Friday night for a year. And I'm like, really? He said, yeah. He goes, you're not really going to stop the show, are you? I said, yeah, dude, I'm done for now. And he says, you can't stop. You can't stop. Why not? I'm just starting to understand what you're trying to get across after a year. And I was flattered, yet adamant that I'm not here to do, I'm not doing counseling. I'm just talking about life and some common sense for uncommon times that we live in. And there's no religious or political affiliation with any of it. And he kind of just, can I sit down? I'm like, oh, I suppose, I want to go home. I got a lot to do to get all this, undone here. And he just basically started talking about how he grew up and that he had no say in going to a certain church. And I'm not going to mention the religion, doesn't matter. And that it was drilled into him, this is how you are. And anything outside of this is bad. It's evil. It's terrible. So when he comes across me, and he's been doing this his whole life, I guess the guy's probably about 40, 45 years old, younger guy at the time. And I was about the same age. And he starts telling me about this. And it was fascinating on one hand that he had no say in how his life was because of the beliefs that were drilled into him by his parents in the church. And that anything outside that didn't exist. And then he runs into me on the radio, this distended voice coming out of his truck or something, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week live. And I get worked up now. You should have heard it back then. I mean, I was lock and load every day. And so he was getting information from a different source that he wanted to connect with, but his belief system wouldn't allow it. And he was conflicted. And so he did what only he knew how to do, which is to bark back with what the toolbox. He opened the toolbox and says, well, when this happens, this is what you say, you're going to hell. He's a conflicted guy. And we had a little bit of a talk, not very long. And I said, listen, I'll come back at some point. I don't know where that's going to be. And this type of thing. And I hadn't written my first book yet or anything. And I just thought about it when he left, about how that was such a telling. First of all, it was a courageous thing to come talk to me after he didn't know me physically. I remember him saying, you look like a regular guy. What did you expect? I don't know what that means, but okay. But that took a lot of courage. Number one, and number two is so telling about how we live our lives and the beliefs that we live by and that we won't allow anything else because it scares us, because it's our personality. It's what we grew up with or what we're groomed for. And to this day, I still get people saying, John, you know, you're such a tree-hugging liberal. Okay. And then I get people saying, you know, you're such a staunch voice for you know, progress and reform. Okay. Whatever you hear is what you hear. I'm just doing this. And so here as I am on New Year's Eve, I was considering the same thing, you know. I'm considering the same thing. I was tired. I'm out of gas. I got a lot going on. My life is very different than it was then. And I was considering on going on a permanent hiatus, whatever that means, until I decided to do this again. And so I didn't have anybody knock at my door today. but inside, in the conversation with my daughter last night was really the pivot point. So I look at those things and the arc of my career and how, no matter what's going on, I almost at this point don't have the option to stop. There's just too much for me to do with what I've been given. And if I don't do it, I always pay the price. It's like a spiritual constipation. If I don't go talk to a certain person or write a certain thing or even these podcasts, I'm working without a net here, kids. There's not a note in front of me. I don't know where all this stuff comes from. I'm just supposed to deliver it. You do with what you want. When I think about the different guests I've had over the past year, of course, there's so many great people that have kind of wafted in and out of my headset. Hillary Ramo was a good friend, and she brings this stuff to the table that nobody else talks about. Charlie Meyerson, you know, kind of an old school news guy. We had a great conversation about truth and how important that is and those type of things. My great friend, Dr. Kathleen Hall, such a powerful show. And just as a reminder, these shows are all still there. You can go listen to any of these. She talked about the power of mindful choices. Her authenticity is off the charts. I mean, this is a person who knows exactly what it's like to have to dig from the bottom and get to the top and to overcome those things. And the Throwback Thursday stuff, you know, I put up a show I did in 2002. It was May of 2002. It was the same year that I went out, you know, took that hiatus, and it was right before I did the kidney donation with my daughter. Christopher Reeve was on, and to listen to that show 18 years later, that was really something. And you know, that maybe the most important show that I did came out of nowhere. I got an email by mistake by a guy named Cliff Bayouk, and the long and short of it is that I didn't delete it for some reason, and I kept it. It turned out that the guy was in the Coast Guard at some point, as was I back in the 80s. And we somehow reconnected. I'm like, well, why do I have this? I'm not even on the email chain. How did I get this guy's email? Because that's one of those things you just can't explain. And because of that, he connected me with Captain Paul Langlois, who was United States Coast Guard retired, a highly decorated helicopter pilot, who is up against more physical maladies than any human I know. He's had his arms and legs removed, and he's had a heart transplant. And now he's getting a kidney transplant from his wife. And he continues on saying, I'm going to win this. So when I listen to shows like that, I'd rather listen to this guy, Captain Paul Langlois, about what it's like to overcome that kind of adversity and how I can apply that in my life, as opposed to a couple of bobbleheads arguing over who's right and wrong on the politics. They're not even in the same sphere for me. One of the other throwbacks I did was the great late Royce Elliott, one of the funniest guys I've ever heard. And he had me laughing 20 years ago, and listening to Royce all these years later was the same. My friend Steve Rizzo, the guy who really coined the phrase about how to become a humor being, how to use humor in your life to overcome adversity. Kristen Piccolini, man, this guy really was the architect of the white supremacist skinhead movement in the 80s and 90s. Had a couple life-changing moments. Did a 180, and now he travels the world getting people out of violent extremism. He co-founded the organization Life After Hate. He now leads the Free Radicals Project, the world's first global disengagement platform. But he couldn't do that had he not lived the life. And every time you see Christian on CNN or these other places, I think this guy, it's truly incredible what people endure so they can come back and then undo what's been done. Jim Boughton passed away this year. He was a guy who wrote Ball 4. I was a big fan of his, and I found a show that he and I had done together many, many years ago in 2000, and I aired that. And you know, the list goes on and on. My friend Captain Jerry Coffey, just another guy, he was one of the longest held prisoners of war in Vietnam, and the lessons that he brought to the table, and still does. He's doing well. He's getting up there in age, but I check in on the captain every now and again, and he's doing okay. And then Nelly Vasquez Roland saves more lives in the city of Chicago than anybody that I know. She she grew up one of the worst parts of the city, and then goes out and creates a safe haven located in one of the toughest neighborhoods in Chicago, which houses 400 people every day who otherwise would be forgotten. I mean, this is the kind of conversations I think are important. When I talked with Brian Jopek, whose son was killed, Ryan, killed in action, and how he thought about Memorial Day and the implications of all that and how that all works in his life and the ultimate sacrifice. For most people, Memorial Day is just take a day off of work and have a couple beers and that's the end of it, and we forget it. We move on until next year, and then we all post a bunch of really cool pictures. But for Gold Star families, they're not real huge fans of Memorial Day. I'm here to tell you. I would say the one guest that I was most honored to have that made me think six times, if not 10 times, about what I do when I move through the world every single day was Dr. Jane Goodall. She was in Chicago for a talk. We were supposed to be in the same place. Didn't happen. And we did it over the phone, and that was fine. But we had a nice talk off the air that was which we didn't have. I didn't have time to put it into the show, but it was more about, you know, if not you, who, and if not now, when, and the fact that she has spent her life basically defending those who are defenseless, and really enduring hardships because of that. Just something else. She was with me on her 85th birthday, and I just. There's two people in my life. I've known some serious famous people. Worked with one. Her initials are O and W. You can figure that out. And I've been around a lot of this. And in some circles, I go out and people are like, oh, you're John St. Augustine. Yeah, okay, whatever. I still eat mac and cheese. It's fine. So the concept being famous or at that level does not move me much at all. I don't know who I would have to meet for that to really become a thing. I never knew who that might be. And then this past year, I was able to meet two people that really, I'm like, wow. The first was the conductor, John Williams, the composer and conductor, John Williams. T and I were, a good friend of mine conducts for the CSO now and again. And the maestro, they call him John Williams, was in Chicago to do some stuff for his music at the CSO. And he conducted the first half. Or I think Richard, my friend Richard Kaufman, conducted the first half. And the maestro came in and did the second half. This was like meeting, you know, this guy was transparent, translucent, and transformational. He emanated. I'd never seen that before. He emanated. And then the second would have been Jane Goodall. The conversation with her over the phone, right towards the end, I remember I asked her a question and she started coughing a lot. And I said, don't worry, we'll edit it out. And she said, okay, John, ask me the question again. I'm ready to go. And the way she said it, there was such a conviction in her voice to get it right and to be on spot. Yeah, it was just a great thing. So all those shows, whether you're a subscriber or not, are on my page that you're listening to this show on. They're all over. There's 99 shows, including this one. And what I'm going to do, I do this every year, I'm going to lift all the subscriber restrictions at some point for a week, and then people can listen to shows that were for subscribers only, what have you. You can watch for that. And as I mentioned before, it's $20, and these are the kind of shows that we bring out to the world, and I'm happy to do it. This is typically the time of year when we remember those who have passed away, and there's a whole litany of the famous and the infamous and all that type of thing. And the one person who passed away this year, who has moved on, that you probably don't know about and you should, is Molly Creeley. Her picture is about 9 feet away on a desk when I got a bunch of things there. I got little things there. I got all kind of trinkets and stuff. And Molly was 44 years young when she passed away a few months ago. She was a teacher, an adventurer, an educator, force of nature, a mom, a sister, a daughter, and one of the most illuminated human beings I've ever met. Many, many years ago in 1990, her father and I, Dan, we've been friends since 1977. And in 1990, they had this thing called Earth Train. And the Earth Train went around the world, and kids got on the train at different spots. And Molly, I think we got Molly on California or whatever. And she went to Washington, D.C. And it was a pivotal thing for her to start working on environmental stuff from that vantage point. So she was on the Earth Train. And every time I saw her for years later, she would thank me for that. And all I did was make a couple phone calls. And she took the rest of it and ran with it. And it was devastating news on so many levels when she passed. And I have friends who have lost, and I'm using the word lost because I don't have another word except that, their children. I don't know how they stand upright ever again. And they do, eventually. And part of it, I think, as I mentioned earlier when I started this, was Corbin's legacy. When Corbin Liefman passed away at 31 and Joni picked up the mantle and ran with it and is feeding thousands and thousands and thousands of kids, it helps take the edge off. And when Molly passed, it was just an astounding thing that the thing I wrote about in Phenomenon that was prominent to me is that Einstein talked about the concept of life units, that we all have a certain amount of life units, and how you use those life units is really up to you. That's what free will is all about. But some people, they live such a big life that when they pass, their life units kind of linger and they show up in other places, and we call it a phenomenon. You know, I don't understand this, or a sighting or something. You can call it whatever you want. Unexplained things. But that's, to me, as close as I can get, that when you live life in a certain way, that how you die doesn't even matter. What matters is how you live, and that continues on, and other people pick up and move on with your work. So every full moon, people all over the world go out and stand and give thanks for Molly's life and the work that she did when the full moon comes around. And I just find that, what else are you going to do with your life? See, this is where it all comes back to me. I'm amazed that we all have the opportunity while we're here to do such incredible things. The Corbin Liefmans of the world, the Molly Creeleys of the world, that go out and push all the political bullshit aside and all the rant and they put it all aside, and they help children. They feed kids. They help teach them to read, that type of thing. It's a huge lesson for the rest of us. Imagine what we could do if we put all that other stuff away. Imagine what you can do if you put that other stuff away. Imagine what you can do in the 2020. You want a resolution? Put that other stuff away. And put yourself to something bigger than you. And pretty soon you grow through that. When you take something on that's much bigger than you and doesn't even directly benefit you, that's when you really grow. And so since this is New Year's Eve 2019, and would have been my old buddy John Denver's 76th birthday, which I find, I don't know if he'd be hitting those high notes anymore, but he was a guy for me that did something bigger than himself, and I watched it, and he continually challenged himself and did things that were bigger than he thought he could possibly do, and he became this voice for the planet on so many different levels, and he urged me to do the same. And so in so many ways, when I sit down even today to do this show, it's because of his influence and his energy and his example and how you give yourself to something greater than yourself that outlives you. So the other day, I'm watching television, which I rarely do anymore, but the commercial came on. It was about a guy who's kind of a swarthy-looking dude in his 60s, maybe 50s. He's got a gray hair and gray beard, and he's on a motorcycle, and he and his daughter are going to go through all 50 states or something, and pretty soon Country Roads comes on, and I started chuckling. And I thought to myself, there's no way that Bill Danoff and Taffy Nybert, who really created the foundational piece of Take Me Home Country Roads and presented it to John one winter night way back in 1970, 71, somewhere in there. And then they performed it at the Cellar Door the next night, knew they had a huge hit. They actually wrote the song, Bill and Taffy, were married at the time. They wrote the song trying to pitch it to Johnny Cash. And John picked up on it, and it became a huge hit. And so I'm sure that Bill and Taffy are getting royalty checks as they should, and all the rest that goes along with it from all this stuff. And if you notice over the last few years, his music has shown up on all these movies. And it's really kind of interesting and fun at the same time. But that's what happens, you know. If you live your life at a certain level, you really, while the physical leaves, the rest carries on. So the work that Molly Creeley started will carry on. And the work that Corbin started carries on. And while it's mostly just in music in some way, shape, or form, John's life in voice lives on. And I think that's the whole idea. I think we're supposed to outlive ourselves. I think we're supposed to play bigger than we ever thought. If you're going to do something in 2020, do something bigger than yourself that can benefit somebody besides yourself. You'd be amazed what happens then. You want to see real magic? That's what you do. And I wish you all the very best in 2020. I hope you become a subscriber of the show. Glad to have you on board. For those who've already been subscribing since day one, I thank you so much for your continuing support. And until next time, safe travels. Adios.
There are those who can live with the things they don't believe in. They are giving up their lives for something that is less than it can be. Some have longed for a home in a place of inspiration. Some will fill the emptiness inside by giving it all to the things that they believe. They believe. Maybe it's just the dream in me. Maybe it's just my style. Maybe it's just the freedom that I found. The possibility of living up to the dream in me. You know that I'd be reaching for higher ground. I will stand on my own. I will live up to this vision. I will trust in what I feel and follow my heart until it brings me home. Bring me home. Maybe it's just the dream in me. Maybe it's just my style. Maybe it's just the freedom that I found. Given the possibility of living up to the dream in me, you know that I'll be reaching for higher ground. Lead me to the light. Teach me the magic of wonder. Give me the spirit to fly. Maybe it's just the dream in me. Maybe it's just my style. Maybe it's just the freedom that I found. Given the power.